Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Geek Town Behind the Scenes podcast. This week I'm chatting with the legendary David Bateson, who this year is celebrating 20 years as the voice of Agent 47, the main protagonist in IO Interactive's video game series Hitman. David was originally born in South Africa to English parents. He's been living in Denmark for many, many years. He's worked across film, TV and theatre. But he is best known and best loved for, I think, his work as Agent 47 in the Hitman game series. He's voiced the character since its inception in the year 2000, and as far as we can tell, he's probably one of the longest serving voice actors in gaming history. We got to talk to him about what it's like playing Agent 47 20 years on, what his favourite games in the series are, his favourite locations and kills and characters, his thoughts on the movie versions as well, and how he was nearly involved in some of those as well. We also chat a little bit about Light Matter, which is a first-person puzzler game where the shadows can kill you, and how he got involved in voicing that game too. I also wanted to give a huge amount of thanks to the people over at the Hitman subreddit on Reddit who either provided questions or influenced questions that I asked David as well. It's a great community, and hugely appreciate all the questions you gave me over there. We previously interviewed David back in 2017. He's always a pleasure to talk to. For any of our previous interview podcasts, along with the weekly TV, film and gaming show Geek Town Radio, you can search for Geek Town Radio in your favourite podcast app. You can also head over to geektown.co.uk for the podcasts and all the latest entertainment news and TV premiere date information. Here's the interview with David Bateson.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, David. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. I'm doing really fine. Been a while since our last interview.
Yeah. We spoke, I think, in 2017, I think, was the last time we were on.
And, okay.
Yeah, 2017, I think it was when we spoke last time. So, it's lovely to be able to sit and chat with you again.
Yeah.
I mean, did you ever imagine when you got the role of Agent 47 that you'd still be talking about this 20 years later?
You know, David, it's just so, so bizarre. I thought it was a one-off sort of cult hit. I thought I had a good feeling about it when I looked at the footage. But I just thought it was going to be a really intense sort of nerdy experience for some serious gamers, you know?
Yeah.
But like nothing more than a one-off thing. Well, not, and I seem to remember at the time, Janusz Flosser and the others, the guys who, you know, I think there were four or five guys, looking at this as a means to earn some money so they could put that money into development of other game franchises, you know, or other ideas they had, you know? So I think all in all, it came as a surprise to everyone.
Yeah.
I even remember I remember asking Yanis Flasser, who was the CEO of IO Interactive, about 2 years later, when we're on to the next game or the third game even, I can't remember, second game, I think. And I said, Yanis, did you see this coming? I mean, look at you. You're dressed in a bloody suit. You have 200 employees. You're in a brand new building overlooking the water. And and he had a slightly dazed look on his face. I mean, he understood, you know, yeah. He saw the humor of my question. It wasn't a really serious question, but he was a bit like, well, no, we didn't see this. No, it was fantastic. But yeah. We've become bloody executives. What's going on? It was massive. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
Yeah, 20 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's really nuts. And they keep on reinventing it. It keeps on coming back in different formats. And it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So one of the things I did, I think I may have done this last time as well, but one of the things I did was went onto the Hitman subreddit on Reddit and said, look, I'm interviewing David. Have you got any questions? And they had questions.
Oh, yeah.
They had a lot of questions.
Good.
So a lot of these have come off the guys off Reddit. So thank you to the Hitman subreddit for providing a lot of these. One of the questions was, what's the story behind the casting of you on the first game? And do you know why they particularly chose you? You know, why you got the job in the first place?
Okay. That was by accident. There was no design intended. I was doing a voiceover in a studio in Copenhagen, a place called Zinkernagel, and I was doing some corporate voiceover for a life science company in Copenhagen. And in a break, they said some guy came in from another studio where he was doing an edit, doing some of the graphics of the first Hitman. And they said, listen, I've had a word with the guys at IO Interactive. They're looking for a voice. And I said, I think I might have found him. He's, you know, and it's you. Would you have a look at this when you're finished with your voiceover? I went, yeah, sure. And so it was purely by chance. And then when I popped into the suite to look at him, the footage, and it was a scene from Hong Kong. It was all, you know, sort of very sort of Japanese cartoon look about it. You know, it had it was all shadows, black and white. And I just totally loved it because it reminded me of Blade Runner.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is my ultimately best film ever. Mm. Anyway, so I went, shit, this is a no brainer. I want to do this. This is brilliant. He even looks like me. Yeah. You know, he's bald. And that did come later when they then started feeding my face into the computer. But we looked like each other from the start. So, and I thought it had a kind of Philip Marlowe feel to it, you know, kind of a 50s detective, the way the dialogue was written.
Yeah.
So I kind of, right from the get-go, I just used that to hang my voice or characterization of Agent 46. On. And we kind of worked it out from there.
Yeah, because
it's weird, eh?
Yeah, and the monotone voice is incredibly distinctive. So where did that come from? Was it just that sort of Philip Marlowe thing of, you know, trying to imitate that?
I had to sort of think, okay, what does he sound like? I mean, you often have this as a voice artist. I remember watching Eddie Izzard. I love Eddie Izzard.
Yes.
And I've seen him loads of times live. And in one of his shows, I can't remember what it was, he said, we had to learn Latin at school. And then the teacher's going, this is how you should say, empore vate mentona, you know, or whatever the word, you know, how does he know what Latin sounds like? How did the Romans, they could have, and then he went on to say, they probably sound like, hello, I'm a Roman, you know. The point being that no one knows what that sounded like, because it's a dead language and they're all gone. And that's the same thing when you present it with a character which has come created out of people's heads and it's just sitting on a computer screen. You don't know. No one knows. So I took that initial sort of 50s Philip Marlowe kind of atmosphere of a voice. And obviously reading the brief about the character that he was, you know, he's a created killer and he's this perfect killing machine that took away some of his humanity. And I thought, I don't think he's going to be going around going, oh, look, flowers, oh, look, goldfish, you know, as he goes past and kills some, you know, bad person.
Yeah.
So it seemed to kind of fit instinctively with that sort of emotional, anaesthetized sort of personality.
Yeah, I get that. In terms of the character, I mean, you've been living with this now for 20 years.
Yeah.
As it's evolved, have you had much involvement in the development process of where things have gone with 47? And have they kind of integrated any bits of you more into the character, like, I don't know, a love of rubber duckies or, you know, something like that?
Yeah, I never thought of that one before. Yeah. Oh, I love a rubber duck. No, this is a tricky one to answer in the sense that no one has admitted consciously that I've had an effect on the development of the character. But there's definitely an element where over 20 years, I mean, that's insane. Yeah. The writers and myself, we've grown up together.
Yes, of course.
Which is literally. So we've known each other for, I mean, I've known them better than some of my very best friends. You know, not that we necessarily hang out or something, but, you know, so it's a weird thing. The writer's sitting there and he's going, oh, I know David. And, oh, I can hear how he would say this line. So I'll write that line. You know, yeah. But he doesn't necessarily think that consciously. Well, he might do sometimes.
Yeah.
But other times he will just write a line or construct a line and unconsciously be thinking, you know, not realize that he's actually writing something which sounds like me.
Right.
You know, and I will do the same thing to an extent. I know the writers and I know the dry Danish sense of humor, which is actually yes. It's very similar to British humor in many ways. And so that kind of very underscored, dry, dark, satiric humor or can sneak into the lines more and more. So then the third element is obviously as the fans start liking the character and getting to know Agent 47 and get, yeah, I like it when he said, you know, I need to use the bathroom. or something. So that it's a kind of a cocktail, which very discreetly feeds off each other.
Yeah.
To kind of, so I think the fans, to some extent, also have written the script or certainly have influenced the writers as much as I have.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because the character is so kind of cut and dry and that sort of monotone voice, what sort of direction do you get when you are recording these things?
I do get direction. Because the writing, it's a work in progress. I don't get like a finished script.
Right.
The recording sessions will typically last anywhere from 2 to 4 hours and be spread over up to 4-5 months, maybe even 6 months if there comes some extra rewrites. So we'll do kind of one level at a time every 6 to 8 weeks, something like
right.
that.
Okay.
That's a very kind of broad generalization. So I won't even know the whole sort of story arc. I will go into the session, which is together with them. It's a writer or two or a director plus a writer or a creative director. It could be, you know, 1 to 3 people chipping in and directing. I will ask, okay, what's happened just before this moment?
Right.
I'm actually not interested in what happens afterwards. Because I don't want to telegraph what I'm doing. I don't want to say, oh, I know what's going to happen on the next page. So I'll be really clever now and kind of feed a bit more meaning into this line. You know,
yeah.
Because that's not right. That's not how life is.
I want to keep it as
and also because the next moment can go in different directions.
Well, yes, that is true. You know,
if you do this, this could lead to that, all that, you know. So all I want to know is what happens, what's just happened. And then the other thing I really like to know is where am I in the sense of, am I on the phone? Have I got Diana in my earpiece? Or am I shouting over a beach, you know, with waves crashing in the background wind? Or, you know, often you can read that. They're obviously writing in the action, what's going on. But if I'm in any doubt, what I'm saying is I definitely ask because it just saves a lot of time. And then typically what we do is we record a line or the little sequence of lines 3 times in a row.
Right.
And then they just decide. Often it's the third time. And I don't know if that's just become a kind of rhythm where I'm not really trying in the first 3 times or whether I go, why can't I just set the third line? Like you set it the third time, the first time. Just can we all get on with this? I know this character. sometimes they but they like to have a palette of choice because they can also change their mind as to how they saw a cinematic sequence. They had, you know, they'd written a storyboard, for example, where I'm come ashore on the beach and I'm going up to the house and I'm obviously on the earpiece to Diana. And they'd seen that particular shot as a long shot. You know, right. With the figure of Agent 47 on the beach, but you hear him close up because he's talking on an earpiece to Diana. So that's how they thought the sound design would be, the kind of beach sounds and the wind on the beach at nighttime. But then when they're actually working on the graphics, they suddenly realize, actually, no, that shot's way too far off. Now let's do him when he's right up to the window of the house looking in.
Right.
And so then it just changes it. So then if I haven't done, you know, given them another option, one or two or other options, we then have to do recalls, you know, and then they go, no, we've changed our mind. You're actually literally talking up to the window frame. You're really close. So keep it totally down, you know, and, oh, okay. So it's that's the kind of broad approach. I will. I don't know if I can say actually.
don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. Okay. Non-disclosure agreement.
Yes.
I can't say. Yeah. Okay. I'll have to kill you now, David. Sorry.
I don't feel threatened by that at all.
Nah.
How many voice lines do you reckon you actually did for the last game for Hitman 2?
Okay, there's a little story to this on Hitman 2 where I was totally wrong. I saw the script as we came to the recording sessions, and I went, what the hell's this all about? Agent 47's gone from being monosyllabic and kind of serious business-minded with a bit of dark humor in, which is so hopefully heavily disguised.
Yes.
Now he's talking like he's on bloody speed. What's going on? And they said to me, we've got an idea, the way we've developed the engine or the graphics and the storyline, we think he should talk more. And I went, yeah, but he's just talking small talk.
Yeah.
When he's in disguise or, you know, in a crowded environment. If he's suddenly, as a waiter, he's actually going, you know, would you like ice with that, sir? You know, another drink, squeeze of lemon. Or it's like he's just like a shop assistant. What the hell's going on? And I was dead against this. I went, this is not Agent 47. I know him better than anyone. and the idea was, they'd explained to me, and said, listen, we think the player will feel more involved with Agent 47 than long periods of silence, which had been the kind of broad theory or how the dialogue was written and the storyline unfolded. And so I went, okay. So we'd all do all these sort of standalone things, which he could say when he's, you know, disguised as whatever character, you know, from a waiter to a pink flamingo or whatever. And it bloody well worked. I have to say, I was almost irritated. I thought, well, you know, because I wanted to be loyal to this guy. Seriously, Agent 47 is like my friend, and I really, really protect him, and I would defend him to the death. You know, I really mean that. It sounds so weird to say that, but so I didn't want to be disloyal to him and turn him into something a bit more kind of shallow or maybe even less dangerous, you know, as a figure. But when I played Hitman 2, I haven't played all of it, I have to admit, but a lot of it, it feels great. It feels as I felt with Hitman 1 or whatever that one was, you know, right from the get-go in Paris, I thought, shit, these graphics and the whole, you can smell the autumn air and the leaves falling down and the color. And by the same token, when you go to Sapienza, you just went, oh, I can smell the sea and the olive trees and you can all that sort of, oh yeah, it feels, you know, I can almost taste Italy. The whole level of the graphics and the sound effects and the dialogue has grown and matured into kind of a feature film, scratch and sniff movie. and so the dialogue now, I think, has moved on in the same way.
Yeah.
And so that small talk, it actually works. I think it really works.
So
I shall shut my mouth in future.
Given that you did have a lot more dialogue in this game, what was the funniest bit of dialogue that you got to record? Was it one of the new lines in this game or was it one of the older ones?
No, I can't remember now, but I was definitely one of the new lines because I also mess around a little bit in the studio. Just a little bit.
Of course.
Obviously I forget that sometimes they're still recording.
Yeah.
Most of them are messing around, can't be used, but I think occasionally there's some bits of it that sneak in. I'm not doing stand-up or something in the voice booth. It's not like that. But I just love what Agent 47 is doing at that moment. I'm going, oh, man, did not see this coming. Then I just make a kind of a side comment. But it comes out of those new lines that have been written. And I think that's been the beauty of the writing in the last one, is that it has matured and has got so many more depths into a line.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on than sort of basic communication.
Yeah.
And I think I may be wrong in this, but if you play a level again and again, you get more of it.
Right.
There's moments of real humor. There's moments of kind of pain. There's moments of stuff that you might not get the first time around. But if you go another direction, or if you just hear the same line again, you'll go, I see. Yeah. there's something more going on. And I think the short story is that has just been some kind of huge process of a melting pot of myself and the writers, maturing over the years, as well as the technology of the computer games world, maturing. So it's all just going up a level and a level every time.
If somebody asked the question, how do you get into character? Then somebody replied, you might not want to hear the answer to that. But
I always kill someone.
Yeah, yeah. Just before you head into the studio. Do you have a process for kind of getting your head into the voice? Or is it so natural to you at this point?
You know what? Now I would say it's very, very natural. Mm. It's because I have such an affinity with this character. You know, I don't know who I heard this from. I think it was an actor a million years ago from Coronation Street. It was an interview with someone. Yeah, seriously. And I heard them say, I've been with this character for 30 years, and I'm going, bloody hell.
Yeah.
I've never done that. I mean, normally if I'm doing a theatre production, it's like 3 months, maybe 6 months if you go on tour, or if you're doing a film, it's anything from 8 to 15 weeks or something. Or it could just be a couple of days more often than not, because you're not on the whole film. And if someone says to you, oh, you did a film with Helen Mirren, I'll go, yeah, but I didn't do any scenes with her, so, we never met. So you don't normally get to stay with a character that long.
Mm.
But I remember it struck me in that one interview, I think it was something to do with Coronation Street, and I went, oh, that must be a bloody amazing. I'd love to do a TV series like Friends for 9 years, God, that must be such fun. Just hanging out every year for 14 weeks of just filming and laughing and having a good time with your mates and then going, bye, see you next year.
Plus getting paid millions and millions of dollars to do it.
Yes, squadzillions. Now I think I look forward to it like a child in a candy shop, because I know it's going to be a good experience and I feel total trust in the process. So all my guard is down from that front. I'm not feeling sometimes I do a job where you think, oh shit, the writing's a bit wonky here. Oh, how can I make this line sound like it really is a meaningful line? I'm now talking about other projects I sometimes get involved in.
Yeah.
But there's no hesitation. There's no, you could just go in and go, right, everyone, let's get naked. This is going to be a good day. We're all going to have fun in each other's company. But now it's just, I know I'm not going to do something light and comedy.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of focused just on the drive into the studio.
Yeah.
I'm already seriously thinking about it by that point. But the moment you get into the studio, it's going to be a good day.
Yeah. So we've established that you do play the Hitman games.
Yeah.
Have you got used to, I mean, I guess as a guy that does voiceovers, you probably are, but are you used to hearing your own voice back at this point?
There's one or two times where I get, I would have said it a bit different. You're just going, I could have done that better now.
Now I see it in context, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's moments like that which I couldn't, I can't know exactly that I'm crawling at this point or something's just happened. Oh, that helicopter's just, I could have made it a little bit more dry there, a little more twinkle in the eye.
Yeah.
Although it messes with my head when I've got my daughters play the game. And there's something slightly weird about opening the door into your daughter's bedroom and she going, "Oh, Dad, it's so great having you in my earphones when I'm strangling this person with a piano wire." And I'm going, "We need to talk. Promise me you won't tell any of your friends that your father kills people for a living." You know? That's a kind of a queasy moment going, yes, well, we'll talk about this one day.
Yes. That, I hope you're putting money aside for therapy.
I know, for them as well as for me.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite Hitman game out of all the games that have been released?
Wow, that's a good one. Yeah, I would say this... a Hitman game or a Hitman level? Hitman game.
Well, game and level, I think, would be fair.
Jeez. I remember I used to ask, the last time I did this was EGX in Birmingham about 4 years ago.
Oh, right, yes.
And I did a meet and greet with fans, which was scheduled for half an hour and was allowed to go on for 4.5 hours. The security guards came over and said, "Here's the keys. You close the NEC. We're going home now," because it was fabulous. Yeah. But anyway, during that long session, I did my own little research and I started asking them, "What's your favorite game?" And this is like 4 years ago. And they were saying at that point, they were going, "Oh," a lot of people said, "Oh, Blood Money, Blood Money, Blood Money." I went, "Yes, it was pretty sexy, Blood Money. It was good, actually. But I particularly enjoyed Blood Money because it was a huge open environment."
Yeah.
But I like the storyline of Absolution.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But it was probably a selfish reason because I got to do a lot of acting.
Right.
In Absolution. The script was really, really tight. It was amazing. It was like a film script. Seriously, well-crafted script. But it was more limiting as a sandbox because the storyline was so locked down.
Yeah.
So I loved that. And I loved his kind of relationship with Victoria. You know, suddenly he's having to look after this girl. And it didn't really go down well for him. You know, he having to be bad and moody and kill people. And he's got this girl he's got to look after. So that, as a level, I will say this every time, but it's because it was my early experience of the game. And it was Silent Assassin, I believe.
Right.
Second game. St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
There's something about that St. Petersburg snow-covered streets and the granite sort of buildings and the wide avenues. It was so haunting. I know what snow does. Snow, you know, dampens sound.
Yeah.
So you can also be, when Agent 47 is walking through the forests in the beginning of, what was it? One of the more recent ones. You know, it's just that snow environment. It kills the sound and makes it feel very lonely.
Yeah.
Not lonely, but very alone.
Yes.
And that is super essential for the character of Agent 47, for me at least. It haunts me. So if I find myself in that kind of environment, it colors the way I act and the way I say my lines, because it just kind of haunts me. It spooks me.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's just so right for that character. In the later games, I would say Hitman 2, this last one, I think it's just gone up to a completely different level.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be very exciting to see what happens, you know, from here on
forward.
In.
Yes.
Yes. I will leave it at that.
Yes, because, again, don't want to get you into trouble. So
yeah.
They had a lot of questions about your favourite things. So favourite suit in the game.
Favourite suit?
I'm assuming they meant favourite suit in the game, not just favourite suit designer, I guess.
No, yeah, okay. Well, I'm a bit of an Armani man myself. you don't mean disguise?
I would say disguise, I think, yes.
Because if they mean suit, I think the way his suit was cut on Hitman 1.
Okay.
That was when I was doing EGX. I remember looking up on this huge poster behind me as I was sitting at this desk and going, "Shit, man, this looks like a rock star model." You know, the cut of the suit was particularly body hugging or just right without being a bit too tight. You know, it just looked cool on him. And I have to say, on the subject of suits, I love the way in both promotional material and still photographs. In fact, I'm going to get out a photograph. I'm sitting in my studio right now and there's a photograph. Yeah, and so I'm going to get out so I can look at it and remind myself. Yes, here it is. I love the way they use wind to blow the suit and the tie in different directions.
Right, yeah.
And even crease Crease the Chef. I just think that really, I love that. It just gives it a kind of texture, like it makes it into a bloody Monet painting or something. It just goes, oh yeah, instead of just standing there with your suit on, looking like something, you know, from...
You've got to kind of blow the suit around because you can't do it with the hair on that character, can you? So
no, his hairline's pretty distinctively non-existent.
Yes.
But in disguises, this one took the wind out of my sails. What the farg was I doing dressed as a pink flamingo in Miami? I will never forget. When we did a press junket at IO Interactive over a couple of days, and I was being interviewed as part, you know, these journalists from all over the world actually came and got the sort of the big tour at IO Interactive, which is a pretty impressive experience. But part of that love-in was they got to do a little an interview with me, or they would ask for example, I think it was PlayStation magazine, and they asked for the marketing department standing there and said, listen, can we just run a sequence from Miami?
Right.
And with me freestyling over it, you hold it with a handheld microphone.
Yeah.
Agent 47 lines. It's now become a kind of pretty famous viral clip.
I've seen that. Yes.
Out there. Yeah. But I mean, it was so far out, the different sequence. I mean, you know, we cut it down to that clip that ended up on YouTube. But I was the one saying to the marketing department who's standing there, and I'm going, guys, I don't know if this is a good idea because you've really pushed the boat here. What am I doing as this Florida man with these yeah. tights on? And and what's with the pink flamingo? You know, if you let me loose on this sequence, I'm going to just go for it.
Yeah.
And so there was a little sort of, you know, chat amongst themselves, and they went, you know what, it's okay, it's PlayStation magazine, we'll go for it. And so, and I said, I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth because I don't know where we're going, but I am dressed pretty bizarrely in some of these moments. And so we just, you know, went into attack mode. And so as disguises go, I think that the pink flamingos takes the biscuit. What were they on?
Favorite target and kill.
Ooh, I think this in a way is quite easy. It's Paris.
Right.
And the kill was the chandelier.
Yes.
The chandelier during the fashion show. I mean, that was just...
that one, yeah.
It was just... It has epic operatic quality drama too. And voila. You know,
yeah.
He takes it on the head. That was fab.
Yeah,
that was worth the setup. You know, getting that one right.
There was a few questions about your favorite alias. Do you ever check into restaurants or hotels as Mr. Tobias Reaper?
I did actually once. I did jokingly. Where were we? Yeah, it was inland from Gibraltar or Marbella. I don't know whereabouts we were, but
right.
I was doing a corporate film shoot for a wind turbine company where I was being sort of flown all over the place, you know, to go and stand on a hill going, here we are, and this is what we do, and now I'll go and talk to Manuel here.
Yes.
You know, the background says... But anyway, so when we got to the hotel, I hadn't checked in, and it's all Danish crew. So I jokingly said, can I check in as Tobias Reaper? And they went, and a couple of them went, who? I went, okay, you didn't get my reference. Oh, shit. Okay. I thought it was funny. And obviously, but that's as close as I've ever come to getting away with it and checking in. But then you had to hand in your passport. So there was like, oh, David Bates. Tobias Reaver, who's the real person.
Yes,
so,
yes.
But I still love to do it.
Yeah.
I have to say. And I'm sure one day I will get away with it.
The next one was somebody suggested I get you to read some funny lines, and I couldn't particularly come up with anything. But one thing they did suggest was, I'd love to hear your take on No, Mr. Bond, I Expect You to Die.
Oh, that's actually rather fun, from Goldfinger.
Yes.
That's a line, it almost feels like an improvised line by the actor.
Yes, yeah.
In the same way as... you know, when in Life of Brian, when they're doing the kind of mock Spartacus line, they go, I'm Brian. And it says, well, that actor actually was improvising there.
Right.
And you were never allowed to do that, apparently, on Monty Python films.
No,
the scripts were the Holy Grail.
Yes.
But they all just, on the cross, they all broke out laughing. Went, we're keeping that one.
Yeah.
If a line sounds like it's thrown away or just a kind of a impulsive sort of reaction to a situation, that's, for me, it's a sign of fantastic writing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it sounds like it's just come out of your mind. And then in that case, for that, how would I do this to Agent 47? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. It just has a great feeling.
Yeah.
It would be a line he would say.
Yeah, oh, totally, yes.
Definitely. It has that black humor.
Yes. Were there ever any lines that you wished were used and you recorded but didn't make it into the final game?
Oh, tons. But they're just me arsing about to some extent. Or rewriting a line as I'm taking a line that I'm reading and then just changing it a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yes and no. I mean, no in the sense that the stuff that was written and has been worked on very hard and everything that's led up to that moment, you know, from the people who have worked on that level for 6 months, it would be horrible to cock it up by pulling the rug on the intensity of the scene by saying something stupid, you know.
Yeah.
So no, I have more respect for the writers. I think that's actually a kind of a British respect for directors and writers.
Yeah.
You know, that the material you're having respect for, instead of going, oh, let's just change that. Oh, let's just change that. You know, I'm not quite like that. I like to kind of take on the script and then go, yes, this is the Bible and I will read it.
Yes.
You know? But I do, there are moments where you can mess around or not mess around, but improvise.
Yeah. Yeah. We've mentioned that you do actually look quite a lot like Agent 47, which was sort of a happy accident when you got the gig
initially,
in the first place.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
Do people ever either recognize you when you're out and about, or do you get a sort of, hey, you look like Agent 47 from people?
Yeah, I have had in 20 years quite a few occasions.
Yes.
Where that has actually happened. It happened one time on the launch of Absolution, and the poster was red.
And he's
swinging around and he's looking a bit down and the jacket's all in full flow and the tie and everything. And I was literally standing, and I didn't realize it, I was standing in front of the bloody poster. They literally covered the equivalent of Trafalgar Square in Copenhagen with posters. Posters were 20 plus meters. Yeah, definitely. 20 to 30 meters, like wide, and about 7-10 meters tall. They were just like, you know, it was a building site, the middle of Copenhagen, Trafalgar Square at that point. And they used the walls of the construction site. It was kind of, you know, concealed. They just plastered it and then put lamps on it. And one night, coming out of doing my annual Christmas show, I went down looking for a taxi.
Right.
And I was just standing there on the street corner, but behind me was this huge poster. And I was wearing a black jacket and a hoodie, you know, and a beanie, you know.
Yeah.
And I suddenly started sweating. People looking at me as they crossing the street towards me. And I'm going, what are you looking at? Have I got my fly open or something? No, it's not that. And I didn't realize it. And oh my God, it's him. So I don't know if they thought for a moment there was some kind of a happening, but it made me laugh when I realized that's what they're doing. They're looking at the guy and going, that's him.
Do you ever use the voice? Have you ever like scared somebody with the voice? I love the idea you maybe tell your children off as Agent 47. Tidy your room.
I did. There is one line which I've stolen the line. I think it was from the guy who got done for all those horrible things, Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby,
I think it was him. And he had a line from that series, from his long-running series, where he says to one of these kids, never forget, I brought you into this world. I can take you out of it again.
Yes.
And that is just a total gift if you're the voice of 47 and your nine-year-old is misbehaved. You know? And I turn around to them and say in my Agent 47 voice, never forget, I brought you into this world. I can take you out of it. And, you know, so, and again, that's back to the therapy. I'm sure it's going to come back and haunt me when that child's
yes.
Lying again. I remember when my dad said to me. Yeah, but I mean, my voice actually is more recognised. I can be in bizarre places. I can be in a bus queue in Hounslow on the London Road. I'm going, and I just happened to say to someone next to me, and I just saw this reaction from these two teenagers going, "What?" and you know, we're all just sitting there waiting, you know, and it's like half raining. They go, "Are you?" And I went, "Yes." You know, they kind of knew. I went, "Well, full respect." And it happened to me once in a sound studio in London. I was flown over to do a Lego voice. And I remember looking through, you know, you're sitting in your booth and there's a glass window between you and the sound engineer. And he just was, "All right, mate, could you just give me a sound check?" And so, and I started reading up this Lego script, just talking normally. And I just suddenly saw his head jerk upwards. You know, it's a real sudden motion. It caught my eye and I looked at him. He mouthed the words, you know, "Are you..." And I went, I just nodded. And that was all that was said, you know, because the clients were in the studio and there was a lot of big money on the table. So we didn't mess around. But that's all he said. "Are you?" He mouthed it. And I lip read him and went, "Yes, I am." So that was fun. So I knew what he did with his spare time anyway.
Yes. "Have your kid knocked anybody out with a fish yet?" was one of the questions.
No, but I did. I was given a fish. I interrupted.
Good.
Excellent. You know, I go there and I get all the bits. So I've got that fish lying around somewhere. So I belted my kids with a fish. Is that allowed?
No, that's perfectly fine. I'm sure that's absolutely fine.
It must be fine. You know? I'm messing around, you know, but I've slapped them around a bit with a fish.
Yes, so, yeah. Absolutely. Quite right too.
Haven't we all?
Obviously, as well as doing the voice acting, you do stages we've been talking about earlier and TV and film and stuff. There have been a couple of movies of Hitman which have not necessarily gone down all that well, I think it's fair to say.
But couldn't agree with you more.
I'm sure you'd like to play the character yourself. I imagine if the opportunity came up on a TV show. There was talk of Hulu, I think, doing a TV version. I think there was talk. I don't know what's happened with
John Woo.
Yeah, I think
20th Century and John Woo, it's gone away, as far as I know. But the Hollywood Reporter first gave me the heads up on that, and then I read about it on IMDb.
I don't know whether that was pre-Disney. I can't imagine Hitman being very Disney-friendly.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe I just went, "Oh, this is not such a good idea." But I think then there was a move at the time, at least from my agent at the time, that they said, well, they were trying to get me in on as a cameo role.
Yeah.
Because obviously they were gonna sex it up and make it all Hollywood and stuff, you know. So I'm just totally unknown. I would never be considered. But to have me in the office as the Q guy, you know, well, right, Agent 47, these will be your weapons. want them, don't forget to bring them back, you know, pay attention, all the, you know, those.
That's a great idea.
Because it would have been fun to have that element of for the fan base, you know, and it might have given it an extra kudos. But that series is just gone away as far as I know. Has not come to any. Although I did kind of come close to the first one.
Oh, right.
Which is when Timothy Olyphant played.
Yeah.
First it was supposed to be Vin Diesel.
Interesting. And then, okay.
And then Bruce Willis signed. He was going to do a two-picture deal. He was going to do Hitman and Kanan Lynch.
Right. Okay.
The other Iron director. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, well, that could be interesting. And that also went away. Then Paul Walker was going to play it. And then he tragically died in a car accident. And, you know.
Yeah.
And then the film somehow got reinvented as a European franchise. And Luc Besson took over as executive producer. And I went, thank God.
Right.
Now this is going to be more about the silent assassin. And at that point, they'd had up to 9 months of pre-publicity.
Right.
Putting out these kind of like teasers going, no one knows what he looks like. You know, he's a legend. He's a myth. You know, blah. And I'm going, perfect occasion to use an unknown actor.
Yes.
Who happens to be the voice and looks like the guy, because they've now, by that point, you know, scanned my face into the movies, into the franchise.
Games, yeah.
So, I heard back from Luc Besson's office that they were genuinely interested in giving me a crack. Because I just had asked, "Hey, listen, I'll fly to LA, just give me 15 minutes. Aren't you even curious?" And by that point, 20th Century Fox is obviously a Hollywood studio. And they went, no, we're not curious. we're going to use one of our own actors from the Deadwood TV series because he's under contract and he's here.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, it's just business. It's Hollywood.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I don't, it was, so I and actually I was 47 at the time. So that would have been fun.
Yeah.
But I think Rupert Friend did a bloody good job, even though he didn't look at all
right.
like
Agent
Forrest. But he came off such a good series of Homeland as a CIA killer. He had such integrity, I think. Mm. And he had also, for me, a slight element of melancholy or sadness about him, which hit the character spot on.
Yeah.
So no offense, Timothy Oliphant, but I think Rupert Friend was better casting in that way.
Obviously, we believe there is a third Hitman game in the works. I won't ask you to comment on that because I know you won't be able to anyway. But no. Alter that question slightly. Where would you like to see the Hitman story go next in terms of the sort of character settings, places you'd like to see him go?
You skated over that very well, David. Well,
yes, thank you.
And I thank you for that. I mean, the first two have been quite a journey into the history of Agent 47. And I particularly like the way that Mr. Gray has come into the scene.
Right.
As his kind of, has come from the same background and, you know, they could be friends and work colleagues. So I thought that's actually, I didn't feel threatened by that. I thought it's a nice development.
Yeah.
But as in terms of locations, man, we've been everywhere in this series. Where would I like to go that we've not been? London.
Yeah.
You know what? Why not?
Yeah.
London. I would love to see some stuff. Agent 47 in London. Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of costumes you could get on into being kind of, a loud tourist.
Bring a beefeater costume into that if they did London.
Yeah, probably. And it would be just as bizarre as a pink flamingo in Miami.
Yes, so absolutely.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I like some kind of, some weird sort of hits you have to do on a London double decker or in a, on the tube. Maybe it's because, I know from my past living in London, different locations, which could be quite funny. But so it's in my mind to have that.
I could really see that working. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, someone once asked me, do you think, Agent 47 should ever, in the development of the character, if he should have a love interest? I'm going, no. Don't go there.
No.
I think it was genuinely interesting in Absolution and his relationship with the girl, with Victoria.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like his inability to kind of express, compassion or emotions, but he knew instinctively that that's what he, had to do. And it was very kind of Leon in its feel. So, I can't comment really anymore.
London. Yeah. No, London. London's good. Yeah.
Seriously, London.
Outside of Hitman, one of the other things you've done recently is Light Matter.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that? And how was the process sort of working with an established studio like IO compared to sort of Light Matter, which was a sort of first time smaller studio?
That's actually a good question because it was refreshing in that it was so different.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily better. I like the whole machinations and the heavyweight hitters of IO Interactive and how everything is planned down and it all gets up to, studio days and everything's on the line and it's kind of big. And that could be considered overwhelming, if not for the fact that I've been involved now for 20 years. But Light Matter was amazing in the sense that, in a way, it reminded me of the initial guys at IO Interactive 20 years ago. Because they were, just a bunch of computer nerds who studied together and had this idea and they were bouncing around at university and they got some attention and got some, money and some sponsorship. And then it rehashed it and fine-tuned it. And I think in a way it was, from their point of view, a bit of a no-brainer. It's asking me to be involved, because they could obviously tap into that PR aspect of it. That, you know, Agent 47 is now, I'm going to play another character. But what blew me away by it was the script. It's mainly a one-person story, one voice narrative. But there is a girl in it as well, who's great, by the way. But I was so, I just said, guys, did you write this? How did you write this? You're in your 20s and you're Danish. And you've, excuse me, I know Danes are fantastic at speaking other languages, particularly English.
But yes.
You've got the humor. You've got the all the different levels that this character goes through, from being a friendly person to being a psychopath, to being moody, to being, you know, teasing, to being evil, to being, you know, sucking up and trying to you know, become your friend again. And there were, you know, it was like role playing. They got all those different multi-layered emotions going on in different points in the script. And it was just so elegantly written. And I was, to this day, I'm still a bit blown away by that. I must say, at that point, I didn't know they'd been so heavily attached to this story for such a long time. But still, to write that fantastically. So I said, without even seeing one thing, and, you know, they sent me stuff to have a look at graphic-wise. I said, before I even look at this, I want to do it. Because it's so fantastically written. It can't be bad. Bit of a gamble, I suppose. But then, of course, I looked at the graphics and was instinctively, straight away, convinced that, yes, this is me. I love this. Because the whole idea of being scared of the dark is universal, and to be afraid of shadows that will eat you up. Oh, that you've got me right there. You don't have to do any more with your imagination. Just put someone in the dark or in a light place and say, avoid the shadows, because they will kill you.
Yeah.
Boom. Got it. You know? So right on a fundamental level, the concept had me intrigued, and then the script was just amazing.
Yeah.
So, I was totally hooked.
Awesome.
And it's been extremely well received.
Yeah.
Critically acclaimed. And so I'm just going, come on, guys.
Make another one.
Black Matter 2. I know. I'm ready. So, I don't know. I just wish them all the best. They're a great bunch of guys.
So we've been off for well over an hour. So I will let you go. Couple of last questions for you, which are the same things we always ask people. So I probably asked you these last time.
Go for it, Dave.
First question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, well, you know, I don't get much time to watch TV.
Even now, is a
crap excuse. That's right. Funny you should say that. Even now, because luckily, still happily employed.
Yes.
But obviously, I have been, like the whole planet, affected by what's going on in the world. But the more free time I have, if you want to call it that, I love this word freelance, because what it means is you're unemployed. It's just another word for the same meaning. So what I do a lot of hunting for jobs and marketing myself. And so that I just kind of do a lot of that, and then I'm massively busy with home and family. We have a horse and a dog and all that. But series wise, I will say I've just seen Homeland 8.
Yes.
But yeah, people know this of me. But I just think that series is just bloody amazing, and I can't believe it's come to an end. Yeah. So as a series, that one. I saw a film last night, though, with my middle daughter. I came into the lounge and I kind of woke up, and I went, oh, you're still awake? And she said, what's this? And I don't even know what the film's called. And I never saw the bloody ending, which I really wanted to, which I will go home and see today, with Will Smith and that fantastic Australian actress from Tarantino film, the last Tarantino film.
Oh,
what's her name?
It's Margot Robbie, Will Smith.
Yeah, Margot Robbie. Will Smith.
Oh, Focus.
It was called Focus. What a crap name for a film.
Yes, it was called Focus. It was actually
called Focus.
Yes, it was called Focus. It was in 2015, that movie. So it's a little bit.
Get the hell out of it.
Yeah.
What? It's 5 years old?
Yeah, it is.
Good grief. Wow, I loved it. I mean, I'm blown away by it, actually.
Not seen it, actually. But, I have to go and look that up.
Haven't you?
No.
Oh, it's great. I think it was great. So, yeah, that's my film I've just kind of seen, almost seen. And another film, the Guy Ritchie film, The Gentleman.
Oh, yes. I've not seen that yet. I'm terrible at watching movies. But yes.
Oh, you know what? I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow.
It's that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I never do that. Apart from, you know, Blade Runner, which I've seen about 50 times. that film I've seen literally twice in the last 3 weeks.
Cool.
And that is brilliant.
Yeah. I need to go and watch that one as well. So last question.
Bring it on.
If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something in the past, something present, or something future, which TV show would it be?
I've said this before, actually, only because I love the way that the element of fun they must have had on set. Friends.
Yes.
From the past. I'm thinking, oh, shit, man. They got money for that? Oh, they must. I would have done it for free, you know, because it just looked like a lot of fun. Okay, that's a historical piece now. But and I would love to be anything in a kind of through character in a serious series like Homeland.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm attracted by the writing.
Yeah.
That's my aphrodisiac. You know, just give me some good writing, and I'll put on any costume for the writing. those kind of movies. But you know, it isn't. So I'm not influenced by, oh, it has to be a funny and light and, you know, it could be deadly serious and people dying all around me. But just give me a good writing, and you know, I'm sure with good writing you always get like a strong cast and hopefully a good director, and that kind of. That cocktail makes everyone step up to the plate and do a better job.
Yeah.
So, I'd like that kind of challenge. I'd love that.
That would be awesome. Yes. It'd be great to see you on TV shows and stuff. So thank you for spending some time to sit and chat. It's been lovely to catch up again. We'll have to do this again in another couple of years.
I was going to say, don't make me wait 20 years because that'd be pushing it.
Hopefully, maybe when the next game comes out, whenever that happens to be, assuming there is a next game, not that I'm saying there is.
you dodged that bullet, Rob. But you know, do stay in touch because I have a sneaky feeling we have things to talk about.
Yes, you know, I suspect we may. So I hope you're all staying safe over there in Denmark, and hopefully we'll all be able to go outside and do things soon once this is all over.
I know. I hope so too.
I shall let you go, but it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we catch up again soon.
My total pleasure, David. Anytime. Take care and stay safe over there.
Yes.
And, don't shake any bodily parts.
No, I will not. Same to you, and hopefully talk soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president. You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.